This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. Trainer Talk presented by Basic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and welcoming everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and of course everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer or your mobile device. It's all available for you at horseracingradio.net. You know, each and every week we have the privilege, and I tell you this quite often, of visiting with so many of the people that make this sport a success. And yeah, we're talking about the trainers in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And tonight, certainly no exception. Looking forward to the next hour. JT, first of all, good evening, my friend. And here we go again.
Yeah, good evening to you. And here we are on the cusp of Saratoga, and we're going to be talking to a New York trainer. Good things to come.
Yeah, I thought that was appropriate. Of course, our Saturdays at Saratoga coverage beginning this coming Saturday. Live from the spa, you can catch us with that coverage of the Diana and the Sanford Saturday afternoon. Of course, our Equine Forum show, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Saturday morning, going to be hosted live from Saratoga as well. So all things Saratoga for the next 7 weeks.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Should be a great meet. A lot of top horses pointing to the Saratoga meet as per usual. And if the weather holds out, we're going to have some fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And, of course, you can catch a complete broadcast schedule for Saturdays at Saratoga, which is all presented by visitbarbados.org on our website, horseracingradio.net. All the SiriusXM channel information for all seven Saturdays at Saratoga broadcasts is listed on our website as well. Check it out right now, horseracingradio.net. All right, without further ado, tonight's guest, as Jude mentioned, a New York-based trainer who began training on his own back in 1970, and he is currently experiencing the most productive two-year stretch of his training career. He saddled 34 winners in 2015. He's already sitting with 32 winners through the first 6.5 months of 2016, and you know I'm talking about trainer John Toscano Jr. John, welcome to the program, my friend.
Welcome, guys. How's everything going?
Everything's great. How about yourself?
All righty.
Are you ready for
beautiful
the spa?
Day, yeah?
Yeah, are you ready for the spa?
I'm ready for it. I'm leaving for tomorrow morning. I'll be up there for the next 6 or 7 weeks. And hopefully we'll have a great meet.
Well, it should be a great meet. And as Jude alluded to, if the weather holds out like it did last year, they're going to set more records here in 2016.
That's for sure.
Well, John, look, you're a New York guy, not just based in New York, but you grew up in New York. You grew up in the shadows of Aqueduct. Take us back to the beginning. When did you first fall in love with the sport of thoroughbred racing and with horses, for that matter?
Oh, I was about 16 years old. I was going to Archfish Malloy at the time, and I used to go to the races right after school, and I developed a fond liking for it. I went to work on the racetrack in 1966. The year I graduated from St. John's. I took a job with Jimmy Pacu, worked for him for 4 years before I went on my own. And then in 1970, as you mentioned, I went out on my own. And like you said, I've had the last couple of years have been the best 2 years of my career.
And you didn't come from a racing family, so to speak, right? Your mom and your dad, they weren't involved with racing in any way, were they?
No, they were just bettors. I like to bet the $2, and that was the extent of it. I was the originator the family operation.
Did you used to go out to the track with them when you were younger?
Oh, definitely. I'm with them every time they went. And like I said, I developed a fondness for it and a liking, and I undertook my career.
What's your earliest?
My entire career has been on a racetrack.
What's your earliest memory of going to the racetrack with your parents?
Well, like the first race I ever watched was Tim Tam winning the 1958 Kentucky Derby. I saw that on TV, and ever since then, I followed more or less right to the team. So I've been, you know, pretty active as far as that goes.
All right, back to the whole St. John's thing for just a minute, because I know that you went to school and majored in history, and you were thinking about being a teacher, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
That's correct. I went from teaching humans to teaching horses.
What's more difficult?
Well, the students don't answer you back. That's the edge, Dad. They answer back, the horses don't.
Well, that's the beauty of the horses. If it was just the horses you had to deal with all the time, training would be a total joy.
Oh, exactly. But there's many facets of the training business itself. You have to train the owners, the horses, the help, etc. So it's quite complicated. It's not as easy as it looks.
You know, I kind of love asking trainers this question, especially trainers like yourself that attended university and were thinking about going a different direction with their life. What was the reaction from your parents when you came to them as a young man and said, hey, you know what, Mom and Dad, all the education's great, but I'm going to go work on the racetrack?
Well, to be honest with you, they thought I was nuts. I graduated St. John's, and I took a job walking horses for $60 a week. And my father said... he gave me the nickname, Mr. Planters, he said, because you're nuts. And that's been a comical line throughout my career.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of those things where people that don't understand racing and don't get the hours and the lifestyle of it, they have a hard time wrapping their arms around it. But as somebody that did it for 20 years, I know how much fun it is and how great it is. And you just can't explain it to people.
Exactly. You can't explain that phenomenon to any person unless they actually witness it themselves. You know, it's a great experience. It's a lot of fun. And if you enjoy doing it, it's you're working with something that you enjoy. You know, it's a pleasure to go to work in the morning. We work 7 days a week, 24/7, no days off. So you really have to be devoted to keep the pace, so to speak.
Yeah, what's the key to the staying in the game so long as you have, John? What's the key to doing that?
I guess fortitude is the best word for it, and endurance. You know, you go through your highs and your lows, and you have to survive them. And if you survive them, you become a success. I was very fortunate a few years ago. I picked up my best account, Grand Jam Stables. He's a tire distributor. From the New England states, his main office is in Connecticut, and he operates out of Connecticut. And he's got tire shops all over the country, you know, basically, in the New England states on the East Coast. And he's been very, very successful with me, and we've had a lot of fun together.
Well, that's it. When you start winning, it makes the whole game a lot more fun, and it also gets you some new clients once in a while. So it's been quite a roll the last couple of years.
Yes, that's true. From one owner, I've acquired about six or seven other owners, you know, and it mushrooms up. If you get successful, they all follow suit. And that's the way to run my business.
John, I mentioned the success you've had in recent years, and you talk about the new clients, and that probably has an awful lot to do with it. But there were times early in your career where, you know, things weren't clicking quite as well. Was there ever a time when you said, hey, you know what, I'm nuts. My dad's right. I made the wrong call. I'm going to go back to teaching.
Oh, yes. I gave that consideration many times. And I guess by hanging in, I stuck by it. And fortunately, the tables turned and I became successful.
In those moments when you're second-guessing yourself, what was the key? What drove you to continue?
You know, it's funny. Horse racing is gets in your blood, and that keeps you going, believe it or not. And it's always that shot of getting the good horse. You always think of the future. Maybe next year it'll come. And you keep stringing it along until hopefully it does come. in many cases it will, but you have to stick it out.
How
you know, most of the times it's based on the money behind you. You have to have a lot of money behind you to operate. If you don't, it's a tough game. But like I said, we've been fortunate enough that you pick up a couple of clients that really get involved, and they're making a lot of fun.
How did that relationship with Jimmy Piku come about back in the day?
Well, a friend of mine knew Jimmy Piku. He was working for him. He's the California for him. He's an exercise boy. And he told me, come on, Jimmy, probably look for somebody to help out, and maybe he'll give you a job. And that's what I did. I walked in a barn, and he put me to work. I started walking horses, and I gradually worked my way. The first year I walked horses, the second year I became his assistant trainer. I was an assistant trainer for about 3 years until 1970. Then I went out on my own in 70, and I've been on my own since then.
How would you describe working with Jimmy and his philosophy to training horses?
Jimmy was a good trainer. He is. When I first went to work for him, he had a filly called Quill Queen, the one American, the coach he called American Oaks. He had a filly called Susan's Girl. He started her off. He was successful. He had Fred Hooper as his client. He had quite a few horses that were pretty decent. I learned a lot from Jimmy. You know, the basics right on up.
Susan's Girl was
Jimmy's retired now. He's down in Florida. And, you know, I haven't spoken to him recently, but I heard he's doing well, and he's relocated to Miami.
Yeah, that's a good spot. Susan's Girl, she was an amazing filly. I mean, she could do things other fillies couldn't do. Talk about her a minute.
She was a really good filly. Fred Hooper owned her, and she was an amazing filly. Like I said, she was. He was the first one, Jimmy, to have her, and then he wound up losing the owner, and I think she went to Leland Fence to make, and Mr. Hooper, you know, divvied her up around the country. Temple Drainers. But she was a good filly, and you can check the record on her. He had a filly called Bonnie and Gay. He trained for the Berglunds. She was, again, a snake filly. So Jimmy had quite a bit of success. Later on in his career, he had a horse called Val's Prince, who they claimed was an ex-claiming horse, went on to win about $2 million in turf racing. So Jimmy's gone to the mill. He's done it all. And I guess he's my protege, so to speak.
Talking with trainer John Toscano Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John, how did you know then that the time was right to go out on your own in 1970?
Well, I didn't, believe it or not. I just took a shot at it. I said, well, look, let's give it a whirl. I know enough about racing to start it off, and that's what I did. The first horse I acquired, my mother and father bought, and that was the first horse I trained. It was a family horse. We won a race with him down in Bowie, and that was the beginning of my career.
Heck, I guess if they were spending money and giving you a horse, I guess they were okay with you being a trainer at that point.
Yeah, they were confident.
It's funny how your parents come around sometimes when they. My mom always disliked horse racing when we were kids. She didn't like my dad taking us to the track. But man, once I started winning races at Santa Anita, she used to scream from the mountaintops, "Oh, my son, he's a trainer at Santa Anita."
It's amazing how it works.
Yeah.
So when you first started, Jimmy, tell me about those first couple of years and getting started. Was it difficult to get things rolling?
Yes, it was. It took its toll, but we got things rolling. At the beginning, I only had one or two horses. I traveled from Maine to Spain. You know, here, we didn't race in the winter back in those days here in New York, so we used to travel. And I used to go to Florida and Maryland, et cetera, et cetera. And it's tough on family life. Because, you know, you're not in one spot too long. You have to do a lot of travel. But, like you said, when they went to all-year racing back in the 70s, then things got easier. You stayed in one spot, and you didn't have to relocate. And that's about it. I guess that's the beginning of it. And I much learned from that.
Yeah,
now
been,
I have close to 40 horses in training, so it has. I've expanded, so to speak.
It's been a long road, but you are in a great position right now. And of course, having that success that I mentioned at the top of the show, so many winners last year, and then almost equaling that mark at the 6.5 month point here in 2016. So congratulations on that success, John.
Oh, thank you.
So much of what you've done has been in the claiming game throughout your career. And that's a unique aspect of training horses, being able to be successful in that claiming game. Talk about what it takes and your philosophy when you're claiming horses.
Well, you must have a good opinion to start off with. You have to follow the races, and you have to pay attention. It's very important. And the astute claims, they're tough to make, but you have to stay on top of it. And if you don't stay on top of it, you're not going to be successful. I follow them every day. I'm at the races just about every day. And I know the ins and outs of the sport. So that does help.
Yeah, you have to do your homework. You have to go down and look at legs and pay attention to the races, and you're making notes all the time.
You watch a horse traveling. I can spot a horse traveling well and not traveling well. So that's a big edge I have as far as claiming goes. And I deal with mostly claimers. I don't work the two-year-olds because the owners don't want two-year-olds. They want instant action. So you claim horse today, and next week, 2 weeks from now, he's back in the entries. So that's basically my clientele. They all have that philosophy.
Do you have any particular things you like to look for, like move a horse up on the grass maybe, or distance changes,
yeah,
or equipment?
I'm very good with grass pedigrees. I know the families and who would like the grass and who wouldn't. And that's a big help. Also, I can spot a horse getting good. I'll pay a little more for a horse if I know he's getting good. In other words, I prefer to take horses on a rise rather than a drop. I don't want somebody else's headache. When they drop, there's a reason for it. So I'll take him on a rise because I know the horse is in good shape and he's on his way up. So that's an important factor.
John, what would you consider to be your greatest claim?
Well, 2 years back, I wasn't training then. I was general manager for Stable with Wayne Widmer. I claimed a horse of $50,000 from P.G. Johnson. Of course, called Love That Mac. He went on to win $860,000 for us. The Carter, the second in the Vosburgh, the Gravesend, the New York Thoroughbred Breeders. He won. He was second in the Met Mile and second in the Bull. He ate multiple checks. And that was back in the mid-80s, so that was probably my best claim. I've had a few decent claims since then, but I'd say he's number one.
Well, if I remember correctly, with Love That Mac, you had the opportunity, as you have with so many of your horses, to be involved with your sons with that horse, too. Your son, John III, and Rob, who were involved with that claim, too, right?
That's correct. We own 75% of them. The three of us owned 25% each, and I had a fourth partner, a gentleman who lived in New York, in Brooklyn. He passed away, but he was our fourth partner. And we had a nice stable going at the time. We purchased a filly called Miss Unnameable for $33,000. She's earned $500,000 for us. She won the New York Handicap and the Noble Damsel. So she was an astute purchase back in 1987. And there were, you know, more or less similar purchases through the years. We had a horse called Sinister G that we were all involved with. My son's own. I trained that we won the lane then back in 2004. So he was on his way to the Derby, as a matter of fact. It might have been one of the best horses I ever trained. And he got a lung infection right before the Derby, and he missed the race. And it kind of hindered his career. But he was a nice horse.
I was there when he.
As a matter of fact, my son was a rider, as you know, and it was completely a family affair. My son rode him, my other sons owned him, and I trained them. So it was quite an experience.
Yeah, it was cool because Paul used to ride for me when I trained in California, and I'll never forget that day. I was there that day when Sinister G won that race, and it was so exciting to see Paul win a big race, and you know, the whole family thing. It was really cool.
It was great. It was an experience you can't define. You can't put into words. You have to actually witness it to understand the feeling that's involved.
Yeah, that was in 2004 when Sinister G upset the Lane's End Stakes at Turfway Park at 16-1, defeated one of the Kentucky Derby favorites that year in Birdstone, who was trained by Nick Zito. And I can remember we broadcast that race on the network. We weren't even a network at that point. We were just kind of getting started. So we were there broadcasting the race back to Lexington, Kentucky. And John, I remember that Nick Zito was not thrilled with the fact that they sealed the racetrack right before the race that year, and he was not thrilled with that.
That's correct. He was complaining after the race. He had a horse called Birdstone in the race, who won on that year to win the Belmont Stakes. And he was disgruntled about the sealing of the racetrack. But if you recall, it started to pour the minute the gates opened. That race was run under an unbelievable rainstorm. And we didn't mind getting wet going out in the winter cycle that day.
Well, it's not unusual for Nick to complain if he gets beat.
he was disgruntled that day.
More than usual.
Now, but I think Bailey, as a matter of fact, Bailey rode the horse, and he'd flown in to ride him. And all Nicky did was mumble after the race.
That was a happy group, Bailey and Nick, after a defeat.
Yeah.
How about the pedigree with Sinister G? That's what struck me. Here's a horse that was by Matty G out of a two-punch mare, bred top and bottom to be a sprinter, yet you got him to go a mile and an eighth and win the Lane's End Stakes. How on earth did you do that, John?
Well, you know, he was a very talented horse, and he went the mile and eighth. You know, he had that kind of talent that it didn't matter whether it was short or long. And it was kind of an in and out. When he was on, he could beat just about anybody. But he did throw his clinkers in, and then when he felt like running, he was tough. But like I said, he was a good horse, and he overcame the pedigree.
Tell me about what happened after the Wood Memorial. You said he came up with the lung infection, but you were close to getting to the Kentucky Derby with your sons for the very first time. What's that like when that rug is kind of pulled out from underneath you?
It was quite disappointing. He was high on the list in points that year, money earned, because he had won the Lane's End. So he was definitely a candidate for the Derby. He could have got in, no problem. But when we ran him in the wood, he stopped to a walk and ran dismal. And when we scoped him and found out the ins and outs, we saw that he had a lung infection. We had to stop him and put him on a shelf. So we missed all the big classic races with him as a three-year-old. And he came back as a four-year-old. We won a few stakes with him, but he wasn't as effective as he was when he was younger. I guess having that problem with the lungs did take its toll on him.
Yeah, that happens sometimes.
Exactly. It does happen.
John Toscano on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, we told you he went down that road to the Derby in 2004 with his three sons. His son Paul, the rider of Sinister G, John III, and Rob, both involved in the ownership of the horse, and that very, very special. I can't even imagine, John, what it had to be like to have a horse like this and have your three sons there by your side for the whole ride.
I'll tell you, it's a dream come true, really. And everyone should witness that and should have that experience, because it's a great feeling. And like I said, you can't put it into words.
You know, Paul was quoted right around that same time with Sinister G as saying that he considered his father to be a spectacular horse trainer. And that's a direct quote. What's it mean to hear those words from your son?
That's a great feeling. It really is. I mean, to realize that your family behind you 100% is a feather in your cap. It really helped.
Are your boys still involved with your stable today?
100%. As a matter of fact, Paul gets on all my best horses. John, he actually runs the shed row for me. He runs the barn. And Robbie is an owner. what, he's got about 8 or 9 horses to punish it with here at Belmont. So they're all involved 100%.
What's that like working with your boys every day now that they're men themselves?
Well, it's a great relief because I can take off once in a while and they can carry it up.
I like that.
Hey, wait, trainers don't get time off, John.
No, you're right about that. To take a week off is almost impossible. But, you know, it's a tough business, and you've got to work 24/7, 7 days a week. So, you know, you've got to put a lot of time and effort into it. But it does pan out, and it's really worth its weight in gold once you are successful.
You know, my dad had a business that when I was a kid that he was running, and he would try to take time off just like, you know, horse trainers do. He tried to get away, but it never seemed like he was fully away from the business, even if he wasn't there physically. How about when a horse trainer takes a little time away? Is it always on your mind?
I'm on the phone constantly with the barn, with the entries, watching the races. I could be in Punta Cana. I go to find an OTB shop that has a race. So, you know, you're never on vacation, so to speak.
I can totally relate. Yeah, I can totally relate. The first vacation I took as a trainer, I went to Cabo San Lucas, and the first thing I did was go to the OTB and watch my horses run at Santa Anita. It's like you can't take the time off. It's in your blood, like you say.
To take 100% time off is actually impossible. It doesn't exist in this business. You're constantly involved with it, regardless of where you are. So it's, you know, it's a great feeling, though. And it really, it's an enjoyment more than anything else. It's not a job. I get more enjoyment out of it than anything else.
John, you know, it was interesting. When I was getting ready for the show, I looked up some information, and one of the things that came up was that your sons, John the Third and Rob, who, as you mentioned, involved with helping you run the stable now and owning some of the horses, that John was supervising a restaurant division of the New York City OTB parlors at one point, and then Rob was actually a stagehand at the Palace Theater in Manhattan. I thought that was very interesting that they had those other interests outside of racing, so to speak.
Right. Well, John worked for OTB in the city, and then, as you know, they went out of business. So once they went out of business, he no longer worked for OTB. Rob is still a stagehand with, believe it or not, on Broadway. So he's still doing it. But John is now with the barn. He runs a show here.
Well, great stuff from John Toscano here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Much more to come. The second half of the show comes up next. John, stay with us. We're back with more Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right after this. Make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Sale, August 8th and 9th in Saratoga Springs, New York, with 252 selected yearlings by the world's leading sires. The Saratoga Sale produced 4 Eclipse champions in 2015, more than any other sale in the world.
American Foal is finally the one! American Foal has won the Triple Crown!
But there is absolutely no stopping Songbird. It is all Songbird. Mike Smith aboard, crushing the field.
Stella Wind and Victor Espinosa could not have been more impressive in the Santa Anita Oaks.
But Teppan has won the Breeders' Cup Mile.
And in stats recently released by the Blood Horse Market Watch, Saratoga was once again named the number one major North American yearling sale by percentage of Grade 1 winners, graded stakes winners, and stakes winners from horses sold. For more information, visit FasigTipton.com. Kentucky Downs kicks off a unique 5-day all-grass race meet in September. Live racing September 3rd, 8th, 10th, 11th, and 15th. And the stakes are high with $7.8 million in purses over the 5 days, an average of $1.56 million each day. Kentucky Breds will run for maiden special weight purses of $130,000 and allowance purses of $145,000. Maidens not bred in Kentucky will compete for $58,000 with top allowance for non-Kentucky Breds at $67,000. Learn more at KentuckyDowns.com.
Bloom Racing,
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross Amaya, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
And they're off in New York. The premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Catch great thoroughbred action at Woodbine Racetrack. 2016 marks Woodbine's 60th year of thoroughbred racing, and the early pick four will be guaranteed at $100,000 on Saturdays and Sundays and $50,000 on Fridays. Plus, Woodbine will be offering 20-cent bet minimums on all Triactor, Superfecta, Pick 3, and Pick 4 pools. And try your luck with the Thoroughbred Pick 5 and the Jackpot High 5. It's all there at WoodbineRacetrack.com. That's WoodbineRacetrack.com.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, the show trainers listen to, and we have a good one here tonight. That's John Toscano Jr. Really enjoyed the first half of the program. Looking forward to more stories in the second half of the show. Of course, I'm Mike Penna alongside my usual entry mate here on the network. That is the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are in our Lexington studios. Not for long, though, because we're going to make the pilgrimage northward to Saratoga coming up this weekend. We'll be there to kick off seven consecutive Saturdays of coverage from the spa. You can hear that Saturdays at Saratoga series on Sirius XM. And, of course, streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. And you can see a complete broadcast schedule along with that Sirius XM information on our website.
Yeah, 163 countries listen to HRRN.
And I guess that's why all of our coverage for Saratoga is presented by one of our favorite countries, and that's Barbados, presented by visitbarbados.org. And I would definitely do that after Saratoga. If people are listening to the programs, they're going to look for something to do, head right down to Barbados. Why not?
No, absolutely. Racing will be in full swing.
Yes, and, it will. will. Going the other way.
They will enjoy. Yes.
Swinging the other way.
Going clockwise.
Yes.
And they will enjoy their visit there. It is a spectacular place, and our sport is alive and well in Barbados, and looking forward to going back again soon.
Well, of course, if you missed any portion of our show tonight with trainer John Toscano Jr., you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows. They are all available for you there every single week on our website. John, we were just talking about Barbados here, as you heard. You mentioned that when you were getting started, you were kind of hustling. You were everywhere from Maine to Spain, as you said. Have you done much international travel and had a chance to run horses in other places other than the United States?
No, believe it or not, I've strictly been in the United States. I live overseas, although I'd like to do it one day, but as of now, I've strictly went in the bounds of the USA. I've trained, you know, I went out to California, I've been to Gulfstream, et cetera, et cetera, the East Coast, the West Coast, and Chicago, but never beyond the borders of the United States.
Of course, John, a native of New York, growing up in the shadows of Aqueduct, and you started or finished the end of the first half of the program talking about your son Rob being a stagehand on Broadway. How many Broadway plays has he gotten you into to go see?
Well, as many as I want, believe it or not. you know, I don't have really time to get it to Broadway. You're up 5 o'clock in the morning, so to get in 10, 11 o'clock at night, it's a little rough on you. I've seen some plays, but not all of them.
That's got to be really cool, though, to be involved with something like that and at least have the opportunity to go when you want to.
Right.
Yeah, that's super. That's really cool.
You know, John, we were talking about the success you've had in claiming horses, moving them up, and, you know, we talked about a horse like Love That Mac, who you had a lot of success with, and you went on and won the Carter with him. How about a horse like El Dafer, who was in the hands of Kieran McLaughlin? I know that was a horse that you claimed for, what, $20,000, moved him up, and he eventually goes on and wins a grade two, although not in your care at that point. But, boy, what a job you did with this horse. Tell me his story.
Right, that's true. I claimed him for $20,000 off Kieran McLaughlin. He was by AP Indeed, well-bred animal. The first time I ran him, he win. I won him back, he won again. The second time, the third time, he performed poorly, and he had glue on shoes, and the shoes came off. So we patched it up. We put the new set of shoes back on. We run him back. He went again. So I said to the owners, you know, this horse wants to run all day. I think I'm going to point it for the Brooklyn. So what do? We prep him in the Nasty and Bold, which was the prep race of Brooklyn that year. He finishes third. And believe it or not, the owner takes the horse away from me after the race. I was more of a shock than anybody else, but that's the business. You go with the blowers. They gave the horse to Diane Alvarado, and she brought him back 3 weeks later to run into Brooklyn, and he won the race. So I kind of get credit for that victory, but it really wasn't under my name. But he was a great claim. He went on to win, I believe, close to $800,000, and I claimed for $20,000. He did win the Breeders' Cup Marathon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did. You know, outside of that pedigree you mentioned, the son of AP Indy, and he had a great bottom side as well. What else stood out to you when you saw him in that $20,000 claiming race?
Well, more or less his pedigree led me to make that claim. I mean, he's the son of AP Indy, and you're getting it for $20,000. It's quite a bargain. And we took a shot, and it worked out.
I always wonder what that's like for a trainer when they do all the work with the horse, just like John laid out, and then the owner takes him away, gives him to somebody else, comes back and runs in a graded stake, which, as you said, John, ends up winning the grade two Brooklyn. What's that like as a trainer as you're watching him compete in that race? Are you cheering for him to win, or are you cheering for him and say, well, you know what, he's not in my care anymore. I kind of hope he stubs his toe. What are you cheering for?
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of disappointing to see him, you know, win the race and not under your care. And, you know, you had the horse 3 weeks prior. But, you know, like I said, it's part of the business, and you have to accept it. It's a little rough, but what can we say? The owners are funny people. And they call it shots. So you have to go with the blows.
Yeah.
So to speak.
The late Eddie Gregson used to say there were two kinds of trainers, those that have been fired and those that are going to get fired. And that's just the way the game is. I know the feeling.
One famous trainer quoted, his great quote was, you don't have to train your horses, you have to train your owners. And that's so true.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. If it was just the horses, it would be an easy game. But yeah, it's amazing. I don't know how you feel about it, John, but it was always amazing to me. A guy sitting at a desk in New York knew more about his horse than I did in California, being with him every morning. It used to crack me up.
Talking with trainer John Toscano Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, you can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at horseracingradio.net. John, outside of the horses that we've touched on already throughout the program, who are some of the other horses that, for whatever reason, you've been around in your career that you're just never going to forget?
Well, I've got a couple now that are pretty decent. Got a horse called Alex Atera. We've been pretty successful with him. I claimed him for $40,000. We win four allowance races with him here at, in New York prior to the winter meet. I got a horse called Speedy Comet, who I claimed for $35,000, and he's potentially a grass stake or a sprinter. So let's see what else we have here. Basically, you know, I'm pretty lucky. I claimed a filly of Todd Fletcher. She was good to us. A filly called Kentucky Road.
Sure.
We went a few with her. And, you know, we can go through the record books, and there's been quite a few.
John, are there certain trainers that you'll look at a horse when they have it in a claim race and you'll say, you know what, I have to take a second look at this horse? And are there certain trainers that when you see them with an entrant in a claiming race, you say, you know what, I don't want any part of that horse only because it's trained by that individual?
Correct. That's something you have to know, who to stay away from and who to look at. And, you know, that's part of the claiming game, knowing when and where and who to go after.
Does it ever make you feel bad when you make somebody look like they don't know what they're doing?
Sometimes. Yeah, the Karen McLaughlin, it's a funny line, when I claimed Odafe, he said, come on, don't make me look bad now. That was a great line. I said, don't worry, Karen, I don't have him anymore. I'm away from
John, when you started the program talking about your newest owners and the success that you've had in recent years with them, tell me about that relationship.
Well, like I said, my main client is Brain Jam Stables, Mike Mellon. And he started with me one horse, and we built it up to 20 horses. We just lost four recently in claiming races, but he was as high as 20 horses, and now he's down to about 16. And he's drawing away stables and a few other guys that followed suit. And we've been pretty fortunate with most of them. We made some astute claims, and that keeps the business rolling.
Yeah, drawing away stables, they have a lot of horses. Do you work on claiming horses for them, or do they tell you which ones they want to claim?
Well, they'll bring up a horse, and I got the final say on it. They ask me to take a look at them. We're interested in this horse, and I give them the do's or don'ts with the horse. And if I like them, we'll take them. If I got a knock on them, we pass. So, like I said, I got the final say on that.
John, how much has the game changed since you first got involved?
Oh, quite a bit. As a matter of fact, when I first got involved, I don't think any of the trainers that were training then are still around. It's a completely different ballgame. You know, we've got Chad Brown and Todd Fletcher, all young trainers that are very successful. And these guys didn't exist when I first started.
Yeah, the super stables, as they call them.
It's a different game now.
Yeah, the big stables, as they call them, have kind of changed the game over what we used to see back in the day. And, John, you've done a tremendous job with your stable and building that stable and having that success, as we talked about in recent years. And how about your philosophy and your style? Has that had to change because the game has changed over the past, three, four decades?
Yeah, I would say you have to adjust to it. You see things now that you didn't see years ago. And like I said, you have to adjust to it. Certain things that you pay attention to that are different now than they were 30 or 40 years ago.
Like what? Like, what's the biggest adjustment you've had to make?
Well, years ago, if a man dropped a horse, they dropped, you knew there was something wrong with the horse. Now, that's not, may not be the case. The pops are so good, they want to run races. So you have to, you know, take a second look at it. And why was he dropping? But the pot is so good, maybe they would just want to win a race and get the horse's confidence back. So you have to use a different approach nowadays than you did years ago. Years ago, there was no money. So when they dropped one and you stay away, there was a problem. But now the game has changed. So you have to bend accordingly.
The claiming rules have changed quite a bit too. In some states, you can claim one and run them right back for the same claiming price. How much has that had an effect on your business?
Yeah, well, most of the horses I claimed, luckily, they went on a rise, so we're very fortunate with that. If you follow the record, you'll see that we're pretty good on the claim. It's like 30 to 40%. We went off the claim. So, you know, that does help. A lot of people notice that, and that's a big factor.
John, what advice do you give to young trainers who are just getting started in the game today?
Hard work and pay attention. That's basically the gist of it. Also, they have to have money behind them. It's a big factor. Trying to operate with scared money doesn't work. You've got to have the right clientele, the right people behind you. So you got to work at that. That's the most important factor, I believe.
Yeah, hard work and dedication, and this is a sport and a profession, John, like no other, where, you know, look, every professional athlete has to have dedication to be successful. Well, trainers are professionals in what they do, and you can't be successful if you're not completely devoted to it. Is that an accurate statement?
That's correct. You have to devote 110% to it. And if you're a little bit of luck, you'll make it. But the Lady of Luck plays a large role in this business. And hopefully she's on your side when you venture out.
What's a typical day for you? What time do you get up? What's your daily routine? What time do you go to bed? That type of thing.
Well, I'm up at about 5 o'clock every morning, 7 days a week. And I probably go to bed right after I finish eating, like 9 o'clock. So that's my schedule. Basically, 24/7.
John, if you get the opportunity to sit back and look at your career, and I don't know if you do that. I don't know if you reflect upon everything that you've accomplished and the ride that you've been on over these past several decades. But when you do that, or if you do, what are some of the memories that are going to come to mind? Your top 2-3 memories that you're always going to remember?
Well, that's from Sinister G winning the Lane's End. That was a great experience. And I guess getting my new client, Brain Jam Stables, that was a great experience for me, something I'll never forget. And, of course, Love That Mac, I mean, would be one of my highlights of my career. We had a great run at that time, back in the mid-'80s, so those are some of the finest moments.
So what's still left for John Toscano to accomplish? What's on the bucket list?
Well, try to get a Derby winner. Everybody's desire. And hopefully you'll buy a 2-year-old that it can run, and you're on your way.
You know, isn't that one of the greatest things about this game? That you just never know where that next special horse is going to come from, do you?
Exactly. It could happen any day at any time. But, you know, that's the game. That's why we stay in it, because of the excitement.
Yeah, you know, when you're claiming horses a lot, sometimes 2-year-olds, they don't show their class or ability till later on when the distances stretch out or they switch surfaces. So you probably have just as good a shot of claiming a nice 2-year-old as you do of going to the sales and buying one.
Yeah, in today's market you do, because there have been many horses that started off from maiden 75,000 or maiden 50 that went on to do great things. So if you're lucky enough to nail one of them early in their career, that'll get you on a roll. You'll make the Derby, you'll make the Preakness, etc. But again, they're tough to come by, because when somebody buys a good horse, they don't want them in a claiming race. You have to remember that. You know, so most of your champions are going to come from 2-year-old sales. And that's what you've got to master.
John, do you still spend a lot of time around the 2-year-old sales?
Not as much as I used to. My sons do more than that, you know, than I do at that. And they attend all the sales, mostly on the video, whatever. and they pay attention to that. So they'll spot something they like, then we'll look at them and maybe take a shot with them at the tee off.
Well, this show obviously sponsored by Phasic Tipton, and they are the premier sales company in the country, especially when it comes to those two-year-old and training sales.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, with picking out two-year-olds in training, what are some of the things that are keys to getting the right horse?
Well, confirmation, naturally, is number one. Pedigree, number two. And looks, overall looks, number three. And you put them all together, and you try to get the best horse the money can buy. So that's your goal. But, you know, confirmation is important, and, you know, they can't have too many flaws because they won't make the races if they have too many flaws. So you try to buy the soundest horse possible and go from there.
So when the Toscano boys go to the sale, does everybody have to agree? Is it four votes and it has to be 100%?
Yeah, kind of. I'd have to say it's got to pass the panel. The panel has to agree on it.
Well, John, I'll tell you what, whatever system you're using is working for you right now, and it's worked well over the course of your career. There's no doubt about that. You've been able to persevere through times where things weren't quite so good. You talked about that in the first half of the show, and then you come back where you're kind of on a high now with everything going the way that you would hope that it would, and we want to wish you all the best moving forward. Always like to ask trainers what it is that they like to do outside of training horses. You mentioned maybe going to a Broadway play with your son, but what else is there that John Toscano likes to do when you do get a little time away from racing?
Well, I guess basically the Broadway shows are the number one thing. We don't get too much time away from racing, but I don't attend too many baseball games because I'm too busy at it. So going to a Broadway show, going out to eat, those are basically the things we do outside the barn.
Is it Yankees or Mets for you?
Yankees for me.
So it's got to be Yankees Giants, right?
Although I don't really want to say that this year.
Got to take the good with the bad.
So it has to be the Giants then, right? Isn't it Yankees Giants? Is that the way it needs to go in New York?
Yeah, that's the pattern. Yankees, Giants.
How about the Red Storm? Do you still follow them?
Yeah, somewhat. You know, not like I used to, but I graduated St. John in 66, so I've been 50 years away from them. But you know, I still try to follow them as much as I can.
Well, John, I'll tell you go ahead.
They were the Red Men when I was there. Now they're the Red Storm.
How about your favorite Yankee moment? What's your favorite Yankee moment?
Oh, I guess they went into the World Series back in 1998, when they had that great team.
Mm-hmm.
They had a really great team then. That's what I could have. And that's probably the highlight of their career and my career as far as the Yankee follower goes.
Well, it's always a team that's in contention, and being a L.A. guy, they beat up on the Dodgers enough. So I got sick of the pinstripes.
How long you been out in L.A.?
Well, I was born in L.A. I lived there for most of my life. I live in Kentucky now, but I grew up a Dodgers fan, and the first ball game I ever went to was Angels played the Yankees. The first baseball game I ever attended, I saw Mickey Mantle hit a home run. That's how old I am. So.
Oh, well. You got to remember that the Dodgers were once a New York team.
That's right. That's right.
They started in Brooklyn, and they wound up in L.A.
John Toscano here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John, last question before we let you go. Saratoga, what can we look for at the upcoming Saratoga meet from the Toscano barn? Maybe a leading trainer title in the making?
Well, it's tough. That's a tough meet, but we're going to give it a shot. I've got 19 stalls up there, but I have approximately 15 to 20 horses back here at Belmont, and we'll rotate. and hopefully we'll shuttle him back and forth, get him in the right spots, and hope for the best.
All right, I lied to you. One more question. The Big A, Anthony Stabile, is the one who helped put this show together. He put us in contact yesterday as we were trying to line this up. And the Big A telling me that he goes back a long way with the Toscano family.
That's correct. Anthony, since he's been knee-high, I've known Anthony. And he lived around the corner from me. We grew up together, basically. And I've known Anthony many years. And he's a great guy.
Yeah, good guy, and he does a heck of a job on our programs for us here as well on the network, and we can't thank him enough for steering us in your direction, John. Want to wish you all the best moving forward, and thanks so much for being here with us tonight on Trainer Talk. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift from one of our sponsors. It is Flair Equine Nasal Strips, so we'll get you some of those, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the spa here next week.
It was great talking to you guys.
All right.
Great day.
John Toscano Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And always fun to catch up with guys like that, Jude, that have a diverse background. They've been in the game for multiple decades. They've seen it all.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he's been in the game since 1970, so that's quite a long stint and very successful guy.
Yeah, and he's really having that renaissance in his career right now, which is nice to see. We talked about that at the top of the show, where last year he saddled 34 winners. That was an all-time high for him in a single season. This year, through 6.5 months, he's already at 32 winners, so on pace to blow past that top mark. And he talked about his new owners and how much that plays a role.
Yeah, well, you can't win races if you don't have horses that are competitive. And he knows what to do with the horses. He just needs to get them in his barn. And he's proven that now in the last couple of years with more horses and horses with talent, what he can do with them.
Yeah, you've been around guys like, say, Charlie Whittingham in your career and even Richard Mandeli. You spent some time with him out there, and Bob Baffert when you were on the West Coast. And when you hear a guy like John Toscano, who's been in the game for so long, and he starts talking about the old days, that's got to be kind of fun for you to listen to as well.
Yeah, because I'm a big fan of the old days, because I'm an old guy now. So but yeah, I mean, racing was different then. It was a lot different than
what's
today.
The biggest difference? We asked John that question, but what's the biggest difference?
I think it's the fact that people don't race their horses anymore.
Yeah,
people race their horses like once a quarter, and we used to race our horses every 2-3 weeks. I mean, there wasn't nearly as much training going on. And if you did have a horse that was a stakes horse, you might give him a break, but the workouts were longer. Nowadays, everybody works half miles, half miles, half miles, and then they wonder why their horses don't win off of a layoff, because they're 3 months between starts.
Yep.
It's a whole different kettle of fish than it used to be. I don't know that there's any one set way to train a horse, and some of the guys that run every quarter are quite good at it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. When a horse is good, I think you need to run them, and when they start showing you signs, then you need to back off of them. But,
yeah.
It's a different game, and it's more of a business now. It used to be a lot more fun to be on the backside, and trainers used to hang out together and a lot of camaraderie, golf games and stuff. Now it's pretty cutthroat business.
And we want to say a special thanks to John Toscano Jr. for being with us here on Trainer Talk. Again, if you missed any portion of the show, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And don't forget to catch us Saturdays at Saratoga, kicking off this Saturday with the Equine Forum, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, and then that coverage of the Diana and Sanford on Saturday afternoon schedule on our website as well. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening.